Oh boy. So yeah. Thanks again to Genre's Depth for playing. Thanks to Allison for engineering. Thanks to you for listening. And thanks to everyone for donating. It is the Hellraiser. Haven't really talked about it at all this show much, but yeah, throw some money in the pot if you're able. We're missing out on 200K. Got to fill that hole. So I'm trying to fill it with noise and stuff. So that's what today was. Next week's going to be really exciting. We're doing Singles Going Steady, and we got our buddy Justin Collector Scum is coming back in. It's been years since we've had the opportunity to be the fourth edition with Dr. Collector Scum, who has a lot of really good records. So it's always really fun when he comes and he plays lots of stuff that I've never heard of, and most people have never heard of, and that's really fun. So that'll be next week. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online, WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Games People Play, filling in for Bucci right here on Freeform Radio, WFMU.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Games People Play with Sarah and Stu. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Stu.
Hi, Stu.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that. I was a little surprised.
By your own voice?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's you. You're on the radio.
I haven't been here in a little while.
We haven't been here in a while. It is. It's wonderful to be back. Thank you to Bucci for having us fill in tonight. Just wanted to do a little shout out to the Booch and to Mrs. Booch.
Bucci.
For no particular reason other than they are very cool people.
Right.
And they're letting us do an October show.
Yes.
Which I'm excited about. I don't know about you.
We are spooky people.
We are spooky people. Yeah, for sure. As you know, if you don't know, this is a show about games and how they intersect with the human experiences of all kinds, like rising at dusk and drinking the blood of the living to sustain your hellish immortal half-life.
It's human, right?
That's what humans do.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. Just kidding. This show's about vampires. For the spooky season, which I'm really excited about. I feel like we've been preparing for this show since we got the fill-in position.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even all of our lives.
Maybe. It's all come down to this.
Sorry to crack each other up here in the studio. That's not fair to you.
We've always been very interested. It's one of our common things. We love vampires.
We do love vampires, and I think that I did an undergraduate thesis project on vampires. Mm. I've been obsessed with Dracula in particular since I was, I don't know, maybe 10 years old the first time I read the book. So, and what about you? What's your kind of basic history with vamps?
I think that it was Dracula. I had a young reader's version, probably around 10, 8 or 10, something like that. And it scared the crap out of me. I was so terrified. I had Dracula dreams, nightmares for a while.
Dracula dreams.
It sounds almost pleasant, right?
Yeah. Pure moods, you know.
Yeah, no, it was, Dracula is really, if we're going to talk about vampires, we're always going to be talking in some way about Dracula. It's wild to have a piece of literature that's like one of the most famous things that's ever been written, right? And it's just so, you know, it clarifies everything that came before and, you know, it's the measuring stick from everything after that. Like, we're always going to compare it to Dracula.
Yeah, and it's almost like if you aren't going to do vampires in that Dracula style, it's almost like you're, you know, as storytellers, you're going to be just working against it. So it's
right.
Still present even as you try to subvert the genre. Or not the genre, but, you know, the characterization of vampires.
And, yeah, it's just, and it's just, it's he's literally the most famous character in fiction. Like, it's him, Sherlock Holmes, and the devil. And I think Dracula is by far the leader out of those three, which is wild. He's beating the devil.
do you think Frankenstein's monster?
I don't think so. I think that he's probably like a distant fourth.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense, but I feel like he's just kind of around a lot more than he used to be when I was a kid, which is not bad. That book is also awesome. Not to totally digress, but
there's more of a dynamic. Dracula is more of a, and vampires in general are more dynamic characters because they are inherently like this sort of walking metaphor for everything that is potentially going on in the world, right? Like they can be, you know, they could be a metaphor for sex or for, you know, the other or all these things.
Or drug addiction.
Drug addiction. Oh, yeah. The easy one.
In the 80s, there was so much, like, sort of this AIDS
habit
epidemic, or spreading this disease through blood, you know. So there's all kinds of really good, you know, metaphors to be pulled out.
Yeah, like, they are literally, like, just, like, masses of metaphors. And that's what keeps them sort of compelling to people decade after decade. We had like three or four vampire movies this year so far, and
it's
just
true.
Like, how many times can we do this? And it's still fresh, like Sinners.
Yeah, like, Sinners. I want to get to Sinners eventually, not quite yet.
I'm just throwing it out there.
But like, yeah, Sinners was great. If you haven't seen Sinners, you should go see Sinners because it's really good. But while we're talking about sort of the type of vampire,
right?
You wrote a good, You're working on a book currently, which I won't name because of rules, but I just happened to read his chapter on vampires because I have the privilege of being a first reader. And you had a really good handle, I think, on kind of the not only the basic history of vampires, but sort of like in folklore, but also the kind of types that can emerge in storytelling. Could you do like a real fast?
Oh yeah. So there's in my view, there's three different basic types of vampires. There's the original type, which spins out of mostly Eastern European folklore, and these are revenants. They come out. They're just bodies who have died and refused to stay in the ground. Eastern European version of this tends to drink blood, and they don't line up with our modern conception of vampires at all. They're like corpses. They're literally corpses that are out of the ground. They're bloated and gross. And
so almost zombies.
Yeah. But intelligent.
Right.
To a degree. And then once the vampire hits literature, it becomes the romantic vampire. There's a bunch of antecedents before Dracula, Lord Ruthven from Polidori's story, but they all lean on this idea of the aristocratic, romantic, very sexualized idea of a vampire.
The seductive, like the seduction of evil,
right.
Explicitly,
yeah.
Which has always been a theme in human history and control, you know?
Like, right. And a lot of it is also about, you know, unconventional sexuality too,
right.
Lord Ruthven is like a very dominantly sexual character. There's Carmilla is a lesbian vampire, and all this stuff is happening in the 1800s, so it's very, you know, pushing the taboos of the day, and then that culminates with Dracula, who is the ultimate romantic vampire,
right? Vampire, yeah.
Because he's suave, he's got money, he's suave.
Incredibly suave. He's got great hair, usually.
And that only increases over time, like with the Frank Langella.
Oh, man.
When he, like, is explicitly, you know, portraying him as a sex object.
Like, he's just hot in that movie. Yeah.
But spinning out of Dracula is the third sort of variant, which comes out of Nosferatu, which is sort of a bootleg adaptation of Dracula that makes... refashions him into a sort of high-level vermin. And he has the rat plague, and he brings pestilence, and it's this verminous sort of vampire. And you see that kind of continue on in Guillermo del Toro's vampire work.
Yeah, or the remake of Nosferatu.
Yes.
The Robert Eggers remake, which I think they're showing at Monty Hall, if I had the paper. I'll find the dates
so
I can plug that. But... or you could go on the website and check it out. But they're showing the original 1922 version.
The Murnau one,
And the new one, which we both saw and enjoyed.
Yes.
I thought it was great. And also, that one, the Robert Eggers one, I think had a really good way of bringing sexuality to the verminous Rat King version of Nosferatu in a way that I was not prepared for, if I'm being honest. There were a couple scenes that sort of shocked me.
Yeah.
I mean, that takes some effort, because I've been around.
And he's such a gross little, like,
he's
withered
so
sorcerer.
Gross.
But he still winds up, like, it's weird. I think a lot of the people who don't like that movie were sort of like, that might be why,
yeah. Meanwhile, I mean, you can tell from the trailer that that's where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to me, for sure. I mean, I remember reading Dracula when I was 10, and I was just like, whoa, this guy is so cool. He turns into mist and wolves and bats, and he's scary and, like, amazing, yay. And I used to sort of fantasize that he was my uncle, and he'd, like, take me away to hang out in the summers in his castle. And then I read it again in high school, and I remember having the moment of, like, oh, this is about sex. Oh, my God.
But it never actually talks about sex. It's
but
really
I mean,
weird.
But it was, like, it was the first – I remember really distinctly it was the first time I – read something and realized, oh, you can write something that's really about something else. And then it was like that. It was like the Matrix. It's like the world opened up to me, and it was like, oh, people are doing this all the time. They're doing this all the time.
But then it's funny too, because Fred Saberhagen wrote those Friend of the Family books, which sort of reinvents Dracula as like a good guy, like explicitly.
Like he was
guy.
My long lost uncle,
and
who would take me away for
right,
the summer.
Right, and that's the whole idea. It's like Dracula's your cool uncle who like looks out for your family over the generations,
and probably works for Nintendo because like all the cool uncles do, right?
And of course, because games are a reflection of our larger culture, like all of this vampire stuff leaks directly into both tabletop games and video games.
Sure.
Like whole cloth.
Yeah. In fact, I think I also really distinctly remember playing Castlevania for the first time on the NES. And it was, I think up to then I had only experienced Mario, really. And then it was, again, it was like, what? This guy has a whip chain? And
only in video games.
And like really big thighs. And, you know, I didn't know what was going on with that, but I liked it. I knew that much.
And the gothic trappings. Like it manages.
It's so
lo-fi, but it manages to convey that gothic, you know, the brooding, the elaborate architecture, and just the suite of other support monsters. Like it's so yummy. Like there's just so much to feast
it's
on.
It's very
there.
Rich.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's, you know, 86, I think Castlevania first comes out.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Definitely in the 80s at some point.
And then there's like a million of them afterwards.
Yeah, I think I really only played with any sort of seriousness the first one, unfortunately, because I heard the one for... Did you play the one for Nintendo 64?
No. Okay. I spent the most time with Symphony of the Night, which was the PlayStation 1 one.
Yeah, I skipped that and console, so I didn't get that.
I played that in several like ports, too. So like you can get like 204, 206% completion, and I've done that like three or four times because I have problems.
Because you're a gamer, and you like to play games.
Yeah,
and as a person who plays games, yeah. I relate to this actually. Yeah,
and that's with Alucard, who is Dracula's son, who you can tell because his name is Dracula
backwards.
Yeah.
Well, and then sometimes they love to do that where it's like either rearranged or backwards, and it means that's them. Like I expected Alucard to be like when I was. Engaging as I was with the lore of Castlevania, I expected that to just be Dracula.
Yeah, I think the first time that happens is in Camilla, because she's Countess Mercalla or something.
Mercalla, something like that. And like Carmilla makes sense as a name. The one that they they put rearranged is like, is that a name? Does anyone have that name? I don't know about that.
Edward Gorey name.
Yeah,
Audrey Dowd. Like all those weird. They're almost human names, but not quite.
It'd be like, you know, Bram Stoker's son being named Marb Stoker, you know? Like, is this his son, or is Bram Stoker now a vampire, and he's going by Marb?
Is it Bram Stoker who got hooked into the fairy photographs? Was that him?
I don't know.
No, that was Arthur Conan Doyle. Never mind.
Oh, man.
The subject for another
that
time.
Sounds
sorry,
great.
Folks.
We'll have to do a detective. Yeah. We can do that. We can do a Sherlock episode.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally the third greatest most famous character in the world,
so why not? But yeah. But yeah, I guess okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Sinner since we brought it up earlier, and I want to hear your take because we talked a little bit about it just on our own, but I want to hear your takeaway, kind of basic takeaway for the movie.
I just think it was just a fantastic. I mean, a lot of people are sort of like, oh, it's From Dusk Till Dawn. I was like, yeah, but this one's a good movie.
It was just
fantastic. I was in it. There's sort of like From Dusk Till Dawn. There's two parts, and the first part is just like social realism. Really,
it's just a story about these guys opening a juke joint.
Yeah, and I was really invested in all of those characters.
I was too. Yeah,
and I could have watched another hour of them just fighting the KKK.
I remember when you saw it because I saw it first, and then you came and you slacked me because we love to slack. And you said, I would have just watched a movie about these two boys opening a juke joint and fighting the KKK at the end.
That is exactly.
Like, I agree. I totally would. It was nice. Then the vampires were great and well done. And I was happy they were there. But it was such a good story.
I never expected to see Irish music portrayed in such a sinister way. Like when when the vampire does his like Irish dancing and like with the eyes and everybody's, you know, ringing around him. It's just like pure terror.
Even more interesting with that, the song, which is an Irish standard. I know it is like, what is it called? It's one the three vampires sing to Mary to seduce her.
Yeah.
Is so actually seductive. Like I get how that worked.
Yeah.
It was one of the few times I've seen. Because I've always been interested in the seduction of evil part of Dracula and vampires in general, and I really thought they did such a good job making that apparent how you could be at a party with your best friends, people you consider family, and then these three strangers can get your attention just long enough to make you put your guard down.
Yeah, and that's another way that the vampires are sort of a metaphor. They're a metaphor for all of the different ways. That whole movie is a metaphor for all of the different ways that music can change your life, right?
Right.
Like, it's just, like that's
which is really beautifully done also, yeah. Just that as a theme overall.
But it can change your life for the worst, too. Like, you could be seduced by these vampires, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, you're in the vampire
posse.
You
hear the most beautiful song you've ever heard in your life. And then that's it.
Yeah.
That's it for you. But there's another great scene, which is, I thought, was really well done. The reason why the vampires were attracted to these people opening this juke joint was because it was filled with all these incredible musicians. And music is a kind of energy and, in fact, life force that is so important to human beings. And so that's why it attracted these vampires to this particular party.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like such a cool, I had never seen music be, you know, I mean, you get souls sometimes, you get, you know, obviously blood, but then there's sometimes some like really overtly sexual changing of fluid, exchanging of fluid, you know, like, or drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But music as the thing of life was, I thought, like, just awesome.
And his motivation is so perverse, right? Like, he is literally like,
he's ruining this beautiful thing.
Yeah, he wants to take it, and he says that he wants to preserve it, but yeah, he just wants to own it.
Exactly.
And it just fits in with the idea of corruption that is so, you know, implied in all everything that the vampire does, the inversion of like the, you know, Christian resurrection, right? Like, it's all just like they are the dark side. So everything that they do is going to be the opposite of good, no matter what they say, no matter how noble their claim is.
Every move they make is ultimately a manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, they're going to lie to you. And you have to, it's hard to not believe them, but you have to stay strong. You know?
I think he lied so thoroughly that I think that he convinced himself that he was a noble
character. And then that's another danger to think about. And like, if you're going to take this metaphor and take it outside, let's think about that. Mm. Let's all of us together think about that. While we're thinking about that, why don't I play a song from the Sinner soundtrack?
That'd be great.
The soundtrack is so incredible, mm-hmm, which is no surprise, of course. And this is not the Beautiful Irish song, because I thought that would be a little bit of a downer. This is one of the songs that Jamie Lawson sings in the juke joint.
I wanna see Till the morning dove, sing my song when the day is done.
My God, that song is awesome.
The voice, man. In my old age, I've come to appreciate voice as like an instrument, and the voice is just fantastic. Like,
yeah, that's the actress. There's two versions on the soundtrack. Both are incredible. I had actually a difficulty choosing which one to play because Jamie Lawson is the actress who appears in the film, and her performance physically is just incredible. And then Brittany Howard does a version that is equally great. So, I mean, definitely check out the soundtrack if you get a chance because it's wunderbar. And also the Irish song that I was mentioning before, just because I wanted to, because I always get mixed up because it's known by most people as Wild Mountain Thyme. And it's this really beautiful ballad. And it's on the soundtrack as Will You Go, Lassie Go, which is also a refrain, obviously. But I don't even know which one is actually the title. But I remember that messed me up so much. I always forget the name of it now.
They're probably both accurate.
Both accurate, yeah. But that is also the arrangement from the film is excellent. Also, the Irish musicians do a good job.
Yeah. No,
I gotta say.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
The entirety of the film and its music is
the film is just great.
Yeah, it just go watch it. It's
I think it's streaming now. So
yeah, it's been for a little while.
So yeah, it's available.
So yeah, but vampires.
But back to I think gaming explicitly. Or what were you going to say?
I was going to say vampires have cross-pollinated into gaming in many different ways. In just as many ways as there are like varieties on film and TV, like there's just as many in games. And it's how do we even like we this is like the first in many shows on vampires and gaming that we're going to do
because
it's
shows.
Just like there's just so much to cover. I think the first time I saw a vampire in a game was this graphical text adventure called Transylvania that I played on my Apple IIc. And had all the pixelated art, like basically every
so you type, so it's not a point and click like we have still now. They're still making, so you actually type your commands as if it is a
So you get like a little description of the area and a picture of it. So I think you start at like a tree stump that has some writing engraved on it, and then you kind of give directions as to where you're going, and then it gives you a new view every time you go.
Love those games.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. And like there's a werewolf who shows up periodically, and he's just like, you know, a black shadow with, you know, pointy ears and white eyes. And it's just like, if he shows up, you have to run.
Yes.
And the idea is that the princess has been kidnapped by Dracula. So you know, the idea behind it is that you have to save the princess from Dracula and go to his castle, where once you're exploring the castle, he could pop up anytime like the werewolf and jump out at you. And I was, both of those things were really scary to me.
No, that sounds terrible. I don't do well with horror games anyway, especially now that they're so like designed to make you poop your pants. That mechanic sounds like, well, okay, well, I might skip that one because also here's something I just had the thought. Princess as a job description is maybe the most dangerous job you can do. I don't know why anyone would do it. If I was born a princess, I would say, no, I'm abdicating now.
Yep.
This is not happening.
How do we convert to democracy? Yeah, no, but the best part about the game is that there's like only five locations. There's like a couple like shacks, a little bit of forest, the castle, which is maybe five rooms, and then there's an abandoned house. And I think in the attic of the house, for some reason, there's a clove of garlic. And that's what you need to defeat Dracula. You just kind of pick up that piece of garlic and you bring it to the castle. When he shows up, you just show it to him and he like, poof.
Amazing. So do you start at the shack or?
No, you started at
started at the tree stump. You said.
And it's the shack is somewhere off to the right.
Great. Yeah, when I play, I'll make sure to go to the shack.
Yeah.
I always find it funny how in text games, especially, there's some object that's usually around you when you start the game that you're gonna need at the end of the game.
Yeah,
and it's just, and that's why there's the rule that's like, if you can pick it up, like you pick up everything you see, everything that's not nailed down.
Yeah, this one
text adventure.
This one's tricky. I don't recall. 100% certainty, but I'm pretty sure that if you get a cross at some point and you present it to Dracula, he runs off in a way that prevents you from winning the game. Like, he'll never come, he knows that you have a cross, so he'll never come bother you again, so you never can, like, give him the garlic to kill him.
So you can't win. Yeah. Interesting.
So, a little trickery there in the, the 16 room little game.
That's so tiny. I didn't, because you sent this to me and then I, like a schlub, didn't play it in time for the show. But that's such a tiny little game.
It is very, very small.
That's fun.
I mean, the only other thing that I can remember as being like a major feature was this goblin who's like in a field, and his main purpose is to like give you Bronx cheers and hot foots. Like that. And like, I didn't know what those things were. Because
I still don't know
four.
What those are.
Well, the Bronx cheer is when you kind of like quack into your fist.
Oh, okay.
And like you move your hands up so that it kind of goes.
Yeah,
and then a hot foot is just when you light matches under somebody's foot.
Oh, right. Okay, no, that's just what it says on the tin.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
There might have been a third one that I've since forgotten.
So he's just a nuisance.
Yes. Yeah.
As goblins usually are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's outside.
But like, I like the fact that that was like the barest use of Dracula.
Yeah.
It's just like he's got a princess, because of course
he does.
For
some reason.
Yeah. And he's just, and you got to go into the castle
and
get him.
And you have to go get that princess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the plot of many video games in the 80s.
Right.
I think. so, it's like, yeah. We've since expanded a little bit.
Castlevania has a whole family curse thing where like all like the family, the Belmonts are generation after generation are fighting
and
Dracula.
And the Belmonts are the hunters. So you play Simon Belmont in the first one, if I remember correctly.
Genetically predisposed to using whips.
Yeah.
Which is like
having very thick thighs.
Yeah. And the whip is probably the worst offensive weapon.
I mean, generally, let alone against a vampire. Do you know what I mean? It's such a strange choice.
Yeah. fantastic music. Again, with the music.
Castlevania music is
so
incredible.
Good. Mondo, I think, released all of them on vinyl a while back, and I got all of them because I'm the mark.
Yep. Because you are the target audience for that. Yeah.
Although the Contra soundtrack is forever lives in my head. I just listen. I could just conjure it up now. It's playing right now in my head.
What's wonderful too about Castlevania as a platformer, it's like there's a whole, you know, genre of retro gaming that exists today where certain games are called Metroidvanias.
Mm-hmm.
And it's named after Metroid, of course, another platformer that's famous from the era, but also Castlevania. So it's like there's this whole legacy of how to do a video game little bit. Like, there's a way when you play Castlevania, you're sort of playing this prototypical, much like Dracula himself, just like this ruler by which all this other games of the genre are measured.
Yeah, and it's like very exploration based. You're looking for new in Metroid, you're looking for new upgrades and stuff, but like in they're not permanent in Castlevania. You get momentary
upgrades.
Yeah, you get
them upgrades for a little bit. And it's also, there's so many traps and dead ends.
Yeah.
And which is definitely a huge part of the gameplay.
And then, you know, Dracula inevitably changes into like a demon or something when you beat him the first time.
Well, yeah, you always have to have a second phase.
Yeah.
In a boss fight. Second, third, maybe even fourth.
Castlevania also has one of the most infuriating enemies, the Medusa head. Which flies through the air.
In a weird pattern.
Yeah, and almost inevitably only spawns when you're in midair jumping so that you can't do anything.
You can't respond. Yeah.
Hit the Medusa head.
Diabolical. Diabolical game design.
And then it turns you to stone, and then you fall, and then you have to, like, wobble the stick until you break free of your petrification. What a horrible thing.
What a horrible night for a curse. Yeah. But also a cool mechanic. I could see being a game designer being like, oh yeah,
yeah,
this is it. This is the one.
The problem is that it shows up at 86 in the first game, and every iteration of the game after that has always had Medusa heads at some point, usually in a clockwork level, accompanied by the little flea guys who jump around. So it's just like it's like a vertical space where you're jumping ever higher. There's these guys jumping after you, and then there's these Medusas like zooming horizontally
across,
and it's just like, oh god.
And it's also again present in these Metroidvania, many of the Metroidvania games, so it's just like it's never going away.
No.
We're with it forever. Speaking of concrete, how's this for a segue? You pick this next song, so I want to have you intro it.
I didn't even know what you were talking about.
Because it's a really good song. It's so good, it like was too clever. Just kidding. I'm kidding. It's
not clever. So, I mean, there's obviously, and we're going to talk about this. I picked this song because about what we're going to talk about next. But in the
90s. This is an intro song, yeah.
Yeah. So, in the 90s, in the 80s, there was this whole, goth thing.
Sure.
I don't know if you've heard about this. There's the goth people, sure, and they're not barbarians. They didn't sack Rome. It has very close ties to vampires, aesthetically.
For sure.
And, explicitly, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I was looking for, a really good goth song and to sort of lead this off. And Concrete Blonde's Bloodletting, the vampire song, is just like...
It seemed like an obvious choice.
Yeah, it was just like, I could maybe play Rocky Erickson. No, let's play the vampire song. So, yeah.
So, yeah, here it is.
Rain.
Oh, heck yeah.
I mean, talking about voices, man.
About the voices.
Johnette Napolitano, I think, is her name. And just a fantastic, unusual voice. And just so I love the idea of just being like, I met a vampire. I got to go down to the river and have a couple drinks and think about this, man.
There's a lot to think about. Yeah. Before we get started about the next portion of our talk, I was looking at the chat, and I see a lot of little ghosties in there.
Ghosties.
As a lot of our listeners know, we're doing the Hellraiser. We're in the middle of the Hellraiser, which is a little fundraiser WFMU does during the month of October. We were really excited to get a show, to get a fill-in show to be able to help WFMU get some money. No presh, of course, but... But yeah, so we sort of harangued Ken into putting a widget on our page, even though we're just fill-ins and we didn't know if we were going to get a fill-in slot or not.
Yeah.
But as you know, with government budget cuts, we've lost about $200,000 that we normally would have for the station.
Community
funding grant, yeah. I believe. And you know, Stu and I are trying really hard to get ourselves a regular slot on the station. And in order to do that...
The station has to continue to exist.
Exactly. So, if you can, again, no pressure. If you'd like a little ghosty for your profile and to have in our chat.
And holy
we'd
wow.
We'd love to have you. And also, we already have 14 people, 14 contributions.
And the T-shirts. The T-shirts are so good.
Yeah, the merch.
The first Jersey Devil shirt on my watch. like it's a gift.
Yeah.
$50 gets you a choice of the two T-shirts. $100 gets you both.
I really love the '90s design. I'm obviously a '90s kid.
Yeah.
I saw that and just like.
I love them both, but the Jersey Devil. Come on.
I contributed enough for both, but yeah, you have to get the Jersey Devil. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. It's very vampiric.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so please join us if you'd like. It's a fun time. We have fun here. We thank you to those who have pledged. You're wonderful.
Yep.
Anyway, but please carry on. Concrete Blonde, Goths.
Yes. So, in the world of tabletop, vampires also proliferate. In Dungeons and Dragons, they're dumb.
Vampires?
Yeah. So, like, they have none of the sex appeal. They have some of the powers, but they don't suck blood.
Seems silly.
It's like the defining trait.
That is the thing they do.
Yeah. What they do in Dungeons and Dragons is they punch you. And they
punch you.
They punch you into draining your energy. And like you lose experience points and that's it. Like it's like even like yeah, there's a sort of a romantic vampire called Strahd who gets introduced later in a module called Ravenloft. And he's interesting because he's like a sorcerer and a vampire.
He's closer to Dracula than the original ones.
He, he actually get it for I think Castlevania II, Simon's Quest. The Konami ripped off a painting of Strahd, and put it on the label.
On the box, you mean? The box art?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Did they get sued to heck for that?
I don't think so.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. I don't think that like there was awareness, IP awareness on that level back then. But yeah, so Strahd is, you know, he's your tuxedo cloak wearing kind of vampire, which kind of clashes interestingly with like the fantasy.
Punching?
Well, yeah. Well,
oh, yeah, or the yeah.
Yeah,
and even, sort of a medieval fantasy based.
But he doesn't even he has like this crazy castle with like monsters and everything, but he doesn't suck blood. And he's looking for his lady friend to be reincarnated, which is like a whole other thing that we can't even get into tonight.
Oh no, that's going to be a different show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
he's still punching people.
Yes.
That's
well, I
so...
mean, he's also like casting spells.
Okay,
at people,
but he has, okay, which, at least he has magic,
yeah.
I guess.
Which has precedent. Nosferatu is a black magician. So is Dracula to a certain extent.
Right.
So it's not out of left field. But like he's still just not like vampire-y enough. But that changes in the '90s, with
thankfully.
Oh my God, Vampire the Masquerade comes out in 1991, and it's like one of the first really big games where you get to play the monster. The monster being vampires.
Yes.
And it is a modern game. It's set in urban centers mostly. Usually, like, so there's a source book for New Orleans, there's a source book for New York and Chicago. The first one, though, is Milwaukee by Night, which is sort of like, huh.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess that's a big city by Wisconsin standards.
I mean, you need a place for the polite vamps to get some food.
Yeah. I think that Milwaukee is surrounded by werewolves, too. So, like, there's, like, this like a turf war thing going on. But the idea is that you're sort of a workaday younger vampire.
Making your bones.
Yeah, 100 years or but you're part of this larger system of it's like a clan or family system where there's all these different vampire clans. They all have their different temperaments and they have their agendas and they all clash. And there's, like, a ruling body called the Carmilla, something like that. And then there's
the Carmilla, like the vampire lesbian?
I think so. That's why I'm hesitating.
Because that's too easy.
Because it's too easy. Yeah. And then there's the Sabbat, which is the evil, you know, devil worshipping vampires.
Right.
And, like, they're loosely, you know, all of these vampires are supposed to adhere to the masquerade, which is a code of conduct that allows them to coexist amongst humanity,
to live in the world
without, yeah, like, they're still
without
prey
being detected.
But, like, they try not to kill and they try not to, like, cause a stir,
because you don't want to like lose your main source, your
right,
main food source by becoming a serial killer,
yeah,
say, yeah.
But they were very rightly connected it to, you know, the goth scene, the punk scene, the nightclub scene of the 90s. So, like all these pictures are just like folks with, like, goggles and leather and fishnets.
Were they connected at all to the dancing under an underpass scene?
Probably. Those folks probably all thought they were in some sort of vampire clan.
The dancing is, I can't argue with the dancing.
No.
They're fun to watch, and it matches every song you put up to that footage.
Yeah.
So I'm here for it.
Adherents to the masquerade tend to sort of, I feel like, draw heavily from Anne Rice's
right
work.
And that kind of brooding, tortured.
Yeah. And then there's, like, family systems and lots of, like, there's an organization,
sure,
right? Like, I can't remember the
name
of
theater,
it.
Yeah, the Theater of the Vampires in Paris is a huge, basically it's a vampire coven,
right,
family, if you will.
And then the Sabbat, I feel, I mean, there's probably multiple inspirations, but for me, I think that it draws really heavily from Near Dark and Bill Paxton's character in that, who, like, the leather and the blood and the not caring, just going into diners and killing everybody because he feels like it, and he's amazing, and, like, that's the character that everybody wants to play.
Yeah, that's like the top of the food chain,
right?
Yeah,
like,
I
that's
don't
what the vampire
to
wants to be.
Right.
But it is funny that Vampire the Masquerade sort of, like, puts that out there and says, no, you can't play that
way.
Yeah,
there's still going to be bureaucratic red tape, even if you're a supernatural being that's lived on the earth for centuries. Sorry, that's
right,
just how, you're still actually human at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You're away. It's just a new way to be a human.
But because the game became massively popular by role-playing games.
I remember, because I never got into it. I didn't start role-playing until I met you,
mm-hmm,
as an adult. And it was, but I remember Vampire the Masquerade being just this huge presence.
Yeah. It outsold Dungeons & Dragons at certain points in the 90s, apparently. And it also was just, like, because it was set amongst, like, the nightlife, it had, like, a really robust live-action role-playing scene in the nightlife.
At goth clubs,
yeah,
right?
And
there
were already people, when Vampire came around, there were already people who were self-identifying as vampires. There was a pre-existing vampire clan in New York City. And they later came up with this whole bylaws for how to be, like, a real life vampire in New York, written in 97, based very much on the Vampire Masquerade.
Yeah.
like using a lot of that language.
And that's a game that's sort of a live action role play in a way, although I think they also maybe believed they were.
I mean, I think that it's sort of a social club, right?
But really, it's a social club, yeah.
Yeah, the New York scene was very much involved, created by a fellow who was making custom fangs.
Okay, now it's making sense. Now the capitalism comes in.
But
yeah,
but all over the world were, like I've talked to people in Australia who were like, yeah, Sydney had a vampire court. Like the vampire
I
courts
believe that
exist,
yeah,
in most major cities. And it's just like, it was an extension of, or like a fun little secret thing within the existing goth nightclub scene, which is amazing. It's something that, like, I just never stop thinking, is this is just so cool.
Yeah, it's super, I mean, I don't know. It's just like, I feel like there's this outsider, the sexy outsider thing, right? Like, we're so attracted to stories about outsiders because so many of us feel like outsiders for large portions of our life. I think that everyone who's gone through puberty, which is everyone who makes it to adulthood, has at some point felt like an outsider, right? Some more than others. And then to have this idea, this story, where actually you are the most attractive, the wealthiest, the richest, the suavest, or the most powerful, or top of the food chain, whatever, you know, whatever your power fantasy is, you can find it in the world of vampires. And so goths, especially, like, so they're like outsiders who are finding each other through these signifiers. And then to also have another, yet another subset of vampy goths.
Yeah, there was a whole, it was sanguinarian great. Ankhs was a thing. It was like a specific Ankh that you could wear, and it was an identifier.
So you'd know, it's like, it's an if you know, you know.
Yeah, but just like the idea of that certain folks in the club have a secret, like, that's powerful, right? Like, it's really, like I know something that no one else in this room maybe knows. And that's pretty cool. And I think that I can't remember. I used to go to goth clubs and stuff in the early 2000s. I'm pretty sure that they would meet monthly above Jekyll and Hyde's. Or no, the Slaughtered Lamb.
Oh, the Slaughtered Lamb, yeah. Which is it's owned by the same people, or was
owned
by the same people.
Yeah, one of those places. Yeah. So like, it was just like, oh no, you can't use the upstairs room because the vampires are
having their meeting. That's so cute, though. I don't know. I really am, like, endeared to that.
I think it's great. I think it's not really for me, but, like, I think that, like, it's a cool thing that, like, I really love that people found that.
We're all looking for our tribe, right? At the end of the day, yeah. You know? I don't know. That's sweet. I miss the 90s.
It was a simpler time in a lot of ways.
It was.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think that Vampire the Masquerade, and it you know, there's a suite of video games that support it.
And wasn't there I think there was a television show slightly. God. I think it was terrible from what I remember.
It was. I think it lasted 6 episodes. It was an Aaron Spelling joint, too.
Wow.
It was like, it was Kindred, The Embrace,
yes.
I think, was the name of the show.
Yes, that sounds right. Aaron Spelling, not who I would maybe tag or tap to head up this particular.
But I think that they kind of I
mean, he was hugely successful at the time in TV, so I guess that makes sense.
But I think they just were kind of trying to squeeze it into the 90210 Melrose Place kind of format, and that's
why it didn't work.
You probably yeah.
Because I don't know if, yeah, it's like, that's not, those people can find their tribe, you know.
Right.
I mean, yeah, the popular kids didn't really seem to have too much trouble figuring out how to, not that they didn't have problems, I mean, you know, but yeah, I don't know if the vampire, it doesn't fit the vampire aesthetic,
yeah,
even, let alone sort of the way the social hierarchy works.
Like, I'm thinking about how those shows looked in terms of like their lighting and set dressing.
Yes.
And it just doesn't like,
yeah.
Like, it's a very specific 90s thing, and I don't think that it was ever going to work. But that is illustrative of how
popular Vampire the Masquerade, which is a tabletop role-playing game, that, you know, and that was during a time when they were still being, you know, the realm of dorks.
Yeah.
And yet Aaron Spelling tried a TV show.
I think the vampire is one of the things that really started to pull role-playing into more of a general acceptance.
Yeah, there's more and more people who are liable to be like, oh, well, I mean, I like to be a sexy, powerful guy.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, I just got to wear a leather jacket? Cool. Sunglasses at night?
All I have to do is look awesome? All right, I guess sign me up.
Oh, you got to listen to Sisters of Mercy a lot?
Oh, no, I already was. How about that?
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's just the tip of the iceberg, too. Like, there's so many other games. There's there's the Dracula dossier, which is, like, reconfigures Dracula into, like, a spy master in a really weird and interesting way. There's Eat the Reich, which came out recently, which is, like...
I want to get into those maybe in the next episode of our ongoing vampire series, because actually, believe it or not, it's time for the station ID.
Oh, my God. Jeez. Okay. Right. Ken, we're changing formats.
We're
going to be vampire... It's the vampire show.
The vampire games.
Vampires people play.
The vampires people play in role-playing and in life. Starring Sarah and Stu. Anyway, you're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online all of the time at WFMU.org. I hope you guys will stay tuned. Up next is Music of Mind Control with Micah, which is one of my favorite shows. I'm actually sort of sad I'm not at home listening to this. It's always weird music.
Yeah.
And then sometimes there's a bop. There'd be like an actual culty bop.
That's how the vampires and sinners got you.
I was just going to say, it's just like Wild Mountain Time when they sing it to Mary. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's all coming together.
Yeah.
You also picked the outro song for tonight. Because you know what I think of when I think of vampires? Saxophone.
Mm. I mean, I think my pitch was this might be the only time that we're able to play
this song. Yeah.
Which is...
they'll know it when they hear it.
Okay, yeah. I'm not even going to introduce it. It's just a beautiful thing. We're going to play it now.
But I still believe.